Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Monday, 25 July. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, chatting with Nick Kunze from Sanlam Private Wealth. And US earnings coming through. Man, if you miss it, they absolutely kill you. Hello, snap. And of course, another Federal Open Monetary Committee meeting and US GDP. That meeting, and we made one like a month ago, but they're back. Chris Rule from CoreShares, Offshore Dividend Aristocrats. It's the ETF, no tech, that might be attractive. And then Dean Tanishan, he's from Glacier by Sanlam, talking about currency timing versus opportunity cost of not investing at all. I mean, do we try and sort of manage the currency when actually just have a schedule? The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines, Mr. Price grants CEO 33 million rand bonus as he's not paid enough. They gave him a whole bunch of shares after a benchmarking exercise. I don't know. I find these benchmarking exercises always a little bit dodge. CNBC, Ukraine works to resume grain exports despite Russian strike on Odessa. So a whole big plan that they were going to get grain out via Odessa, Russia would let that happen. And then it seems that maybe kind of sort of not really. We'll keep an eye on that. Morning markets, US was red on Friday. S&P down 0.9%, NASDAQ down 1.8%. Asia is red. Sydney's off a couple of points. Tokyo down 0.75%. Commodities mostly green over the weekend. We got gold at $1,744. Brent weaker at $102.67 a barrel. Platinum 860. And palladium flying 2,044 an ounce. But man, palladium is volatile. Rand 16.85. Top 40 opening call 370 points to the red. That's about 0.7% down. That as Tencent trades down 2.1% in the Hong Kong lunch break.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Checking out with Nick Kunze, Senior Portfolio Manager, Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, appreciate the early morning time. I said it there in the intro, US earnings season, we're just over a week into it. My sense is earnings actually not doing, they're doing okay. I mean, not shooting the lights out, but no one was expecting that. But what always strikes me is that insane volatility. Snap has a weak set of numbers, stock down 40%. Don't mess with American traders is the message.
Yeah, morning, Simon. It's exactly right. We're used to having a bit of a miss and the stock drops a couple of percent, but yeah. Not in the US, as you said. There are some big, big hits. And last week was an interesting one with all the central banks reporting. Obviously, this week is the monster one with the Fed. And then earnings season continuing, as you said. I think it's a big one. I mean, we kick off all the big tech companies kicking off their quarterly earnings season, and we're starting with Alphabet tomorrow. And of course, you mentioned Snap, Simon. You know, there was a big miss. They spoke about, the online ad revenues, et cetera, and the other techies sort of fell in unison. So I think it'll be quite an interesting one for techs this week as well.
Yeah, and you mentioned, data coming through. I think we've got GDP on Thursday. The Q1 was negative. It's unlikely that Q2 will be negative. So not a technical recession. But it's going to keep market nervous. And of course, another Federal Open Monetary. I mean, they met just 5 weeks ago, but this is their schedule. And we're going to get a rate increase, I imagine. Question is how much?
Yeah, I think 0.75 is penciled in. I mean, that sort of that gap between with sort of real rates and overnight interest rates getting ever wider. But I think also in the background now, there's these little murmurings of recession. I mean, you mentioned it now. I mean, could we tip into a technical recession? I'm not sure. Clearly, the world is slowing down. But the earnings season, I don't think the earnings would be that bad. And, it was only a few weeks ago we had an unemployment number of 3.6%. Yeah. So I think it makes a little bit of a mockery of the recession talk for now anyway. But there's a slowdown coming, and the question is, are these central banks going to continue to tackle inflation, which I think there are, been woefully behind the curve for over a year now.
Yeah, and I take the point around the earnings. I mean, there was lots of concern. Yes, they're a little bit slower. Yes, Snap is struggling. Look, Snap's never made money. I think the Metas and the Alphabets might squeeze a little bit, but they're a different game. But broadly, they've been coming in okay. I mean, it's tough out there, but it's not end of the world sort of tough, is my sense.
No, they've been okay. Look, I mean, obviously last week was all the big banks, and that's quite a good indication that, you know, it's such a difficult place, Simon, because, I mean, the one side with inflation coming along, you kind of want to be long financials, right? You want to be long banks, rising interest rates, etc. But if there is a recession coming, goodness me, you do not want to be long the banks. So it really is quite a difficult play at the moment. But, yeah, I take your point also. I think they came in okay. I mean, you mentioned Snap was a big miss, but it's not a huge company on the on the scheme of things. The others have been okay. Energy companies have been, we know, are going to do really well. I thought the miners, diversified miners, had a few reports and production updates were okay too. So I think it's okay, all things considered. Let's put it this way. If you long the market right now, I don't know if I'd panic just yet. I think let's get some more data points before we make any decisions.
A quick last one. I see the Rand strengthening a whole bunch on Friday. I suppose to a degree liking that rate increase. And of course our currency, I mean, Tetema Tulari from RMB, he just calls it a rattlesnake, which is probably the best description.
Yeah, all over the place. All over the place. Look, I think 17 and a half, wherever it was, almost got to, you know, in a couple of days last week, was a little bit overdone. It's probably, you know, around about here, 16, 18, maybe a little bit weaker for my liking. Maybe 16.50 is a fair, it is where it should be. But yeah, it's very volatile, and unfortunately, we're at the liberty to the power of the dollar and whatever that does. And a little bit of dollar weakness this morning. But again, all depends what the Fed does this week, I'm afraid.
Yeah, let's watch that. Fed, Tuesday, Wednesday will be that. We'll have the announcement Wednesday evening. It'll come after our market closes, usually around 8:30 Johannesburg time. Nick Kunz, the Senior Portfolio Manager, Sanlam Private Wealth. Appreciate the early morning.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Joining now with Dean Dinishan, Senior Research and Investment Analyst at Glacier by Sanlam. Dean, appreciate the early morning time. You had an article out, I think it was early last week, and as I was reading it, I'd been at an event the week before. I'd shown a chart of the Rand purely to indicate that it weakens over long term. And everyone afterwards comes up to me and wants to know, should they be moving currency now? Where's it going? There's almost a sense as Africans, we want to be currency traders rather than just investors, and you've run some data that says, you know, almost in a sense, kind of ignore the Rand.
Yeah, Simon, that's right. I mean, we've gone through the exercise of Glacier a couple months back to have a look at, you know, what sort of exchange rate moves investors can expect after periods of either extreme Rand weakness or extreme Rand strength. We know this is sort of an issue that investors often sit with in terms of delaying a decision to externalize money because of perhaps sitting in a period of Rand weakness. And really what the numbers show, surprisingly, are that even for periods as short as 1 year subsequent to Rand extreme Rand moves, it really is, I mean, there's not much between the two, you know. So whether you're managing to time it perfectly, which we all know is really difficult to do, the subsequent moves really are negligible in terms of whether it's been in a time of Rand strength or Rand weakness. And we think that really supports the fact that it's a decision that should be made for strategic reasons.
Yeah, that's what absolutely struck me about the data. I mean, you know, when we see some of those Rand weaknesses, I mean, for example, May 13, you know, Rand weakens, it's not end of the world, and it continued. So it comes to the point, it's to have a strategy, to have a plan, I mean, around your currency, and almost in a sense, a schedule, and you stick to it regardless what the Rand is actually doing. I know I moved money at, I think, 16.30, and it felt really bad. But, I mean, every cent I've taken offshore, as I sit here this morning, is in profit.
Yeah, exactly right. I think the benefit that investors have when deciding to externalize is that essentially if you're making it for the right reason and it is for a strategic purpose given your unique financial needs, then you can just sit back and ride on the coattails of economic theory. We all know that the Rand is a depreciating currency will remain so for the foreseeable future. I think what many investors are scarred by are sort of those early 2000 years where many people would have externalized and experienced some pretty strong rand strength in the following years. But the local fiscus is in a very different position to what it was 20 odd years ago. And that sort of type of sustained rand strength is something we haven't experienced for some time. And the numbers or the data certainly suggest that over longer terms, you're definitely going to be better off after a number of years when benefiting from some of those external exchange rate factors.
Yeah, I remember that early, I think it was December 2000, and one rand hit 1360, 1380, and then promptly over the next many years went down to sub six. But as you point out, I mean, we were running a budget surplus at that point under then Finance Minister Trevor Manuel. Does it then mean, I mean, my strategy is quite simple, is literally every month and about the fifth of the month, I just take some cash offshore. And these days it's easy enough to do. It's not the legwork which perhaps was 10 or more years ago. Have a schedule and stick to it and do it almost in a sense blindly.
Yeah, no, it makes exact sense. I mean, it's we're thankful, I suppose, to be in a position where there's still enough allowance for investors to externalize, and so making I suppose the most of that opportunity while we can makes a lot of sense.
And does it matter which currency? We always talk, when we're talking about offshoring, it typically falls into the dollar. And I often get asked, which one should it be? Should it be euro? What about sterling? And my answer is always, I don't know what's going to be the winning currency over the rest of my lifetime, but I know the dollar is still going to be there and be a significant one. I mean, is that still generally the currency that investors are moving into?
It's certainly what we're seeing, Simon. It definitely remains the most popular currency to externalize in. And I would agree that, on a long-term basis, it certainly is a challenging, it's a challenging call to make in terms of which would be the strongest in the next 5 years or so. I think what probably is a safer bet to make for investors is that in comparison to the rand, a basket of your recognizable developed market currencies are certainly going to benefit investors over the longer term. So whether that's the dollar, the euro, the pound sterling, we know that around the world, all currencies and I suppose all countries are grappling with their own internal challenges. And there's likely to be ebbs and flows between those three. We know for a long time the Japanese yen was seen as a sort of a safe haven currency. In certain times that remains the case, but they've obviously been dealing with some of their own challenges of the last few years, which has changed that slightly. And it is an example of the type of the type of changes we might see within that basket. But seeing that basket as a whole and for the foreseeable future, I mean, the US dollar, I think would remain that sort of holding that safe haven status. And that's really the way that investors should be thinking about these currencies, is in comparison to their local currency, as opposed to picking the perfect one, as well as trying to sort of invest in those currencies at the perfect time.
Yeah, I take your point. And I suppose trying to pick the currency is pretty much the same as trying to time the currency. Dina Dineshan, Senior Research Investment Analyst at Glacier Basanlam, appreciate the early morning time. And that is our question today on our LinkedIn and Twitter. Are you trying to, as you're sort of offshoring money, are you trying by schedule? Are you trying to time it? Are you timing it well? Or perhaps you're timing it poorly? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At StanLib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Chris Rule from Cautious. Chris, appreciate the early morning time. Your Global Dividend Aristocrat, official name, Cautious S&P Global Dividend Aristocrat ETF. We were chatting Friday and you pointed out to me that because of its methodology, which is a long track record of dividend payments, if memory serves for U.S. companies, I think it's 25 years, it means it is free of tech. And looking at that chart, it is definitely free of tech because it's been under pressure, but not anything like we've seen in the NASDAQ, and truthfully not even as much as we've seen on the S&P 500.
Yeah, that's 100% right. It's a you know, the methodology of Dividend Aristocrats has been around for some time now, but the companies to qualify in the U.S., I mean, you said 25, it's actually 50 years.
Oh.
so it varies from region to region, but they really are the kind of companies that have proven their track record through cash flow and dividend payments. So, you know, when you look at the sector makeup, going into, say, the beginning of this year, tech was sitting at around 5% of the strategy. And something like consumer staples, on the other hand, was close to 20. And that's almost an exact inverse of what you see in, say, an MSCI World or an MSCI Acqui. So the exposure looked very different. And then because of, you know, some of the pressure around, you know, in the market, interest rate pressure and inflation pressure, the behavior has been very different, of course, in the strategy relative to some of those names, the NASDAQ and the S&P 500 and so forth that you named.
So that actually then makes me think about it almost. Yeah, I'd looked at it and thought, hey, this is a nice non-tech. And that's not an untrue statement. But particularly considering most investors, we're going to be in MSCI World or we're going to be in S&P 500 or your global one, which is code is global. And they all serve a purpose. They're all a little tech heavy. This is almost a nice contrarian to have in the portfolio because it is significantly less volatile. It's going to be a little more boring, but there's a space for some boring in an equity portfolio.
Absolutely. We did, you know, before we launched this fund, we did a lot of work, particularly in the private clients stockbroking markets. And that suggested that clients, when they were externalizing their money and investing offshore, were actually looking for safe haven investments. So, like you say, boring companies, the kind of companies that you recognize and that have been around for a long time, the Unilevers and Procter & Gamble, Coca-Colas and Pepsi's, you know, these are the kind of companies actually that clients were looking to invest in as their nest egg. That, you know, a large reason why clients were investing offshore was to diversify their exposure and to, you know, to protect the longevity of their wealth ultimately. And so, yeah, the way we position it is exactly like that. It's a diversifier in a portfolio. It's a portfolio of high quality stocks that have proven through time to be, you know, their business models, essentially.
Yeah, and it is. I mean, 50 years of dividend payment, that does not come lightly at all. And it is, it's stocks, you know, it's IBM, it's Colgate-Palmolive, it's as you say, Procter & Gamble, those, you know, I always say, even if times are tough, we're still brushing our teeth. We'll leave it there. Chris Rule, Cautious, as always, appreciate the early morning insights. That's it for today. On Friday, obviously, we'd had the rate increase from the MPC on Thursday, taking prime to 9%. A million rand bond is now costing some 1,250 more per month. That's 15,000 a year. And I think we're going to be 10% or more by the end of the year. Debt has suddenly got very expensive. Or maybe put the other way, the very cheap debt from the pandemic has gone and we are back to normalized. Because remember, prime was 9.75 ahead of the pandemic. We asked you how you're managing your payments onto a bond, which is, you know, massively more expensive. It was broadly split three ways. A third of you saying, yeah, you know what, it's fine. It's not nice, but you're managing it okay. Third of you saying, don't have a bond, and that's perhaps the best place to be right now, while the other third was saying it is going to be hard, and it absolutely is. Even if you can afford the 1,250 a month, let's be true, you'd rather be spending it somewhere else rather than on interest. Have your vote, have your say, Twitter and LinkedIn. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, MoneyWeb website and app, 6:30 a.m. podcast available just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nabokle, Nicole Tetzler, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. We're going to get a sense of consumer under pressure.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.